And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 671. We're here to recap your week 8 fab and talk some swing decisions, swing speeds, swing stuff. A lot of fun stuff on Twitter about it these days. We're going to talk about that and much, much more. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, and my guest, as you know, most of the time, half the time these days on Mondays, you can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tid, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing great, Bubba. Yeah, you kind of broke the news that everyone already knows about, but the new bat, I'm going to call it Batcast. I don't think I've heard anyone say that, but I think it's the easiest way to call it. Yeah, so we're going to talk some Batcast stuff and the usual fab, and should be a good episode. I have a couple options for things to go over besides the Batcast stuff, so it should be a busy episode.
Yep, we'll have a lot to cover for you guys in about an hour 15, give or take, what we usually do on the show here. So we'll have some fun. We have some listener questions too. Apparently a lot of people like Helio Ramos. That'll be fun. We'll talk about him and much more, but let's get into it. It's kind of like, you know, you knew me, even Ryan was texting me when I was tweeting this morning that, like, I'm a tongue-in-cheek sarcastic person. So, like, I'm having fun with everyone tweeting out all this, like the same leaderboard, essentially. Everyone's tweeting out the same leaderboard, and they're trying, it's like the old, if you've seen Office Space, the jumping to conclusions map, like, this is what we're doing right now. And, I was just like, okay, so you tell me if you swing harder, you hit the ball harder. Needed a board for that. That's cool stuff. But it was sarcasm. I get it. There's probably stuff really smart people can do with this. Me being one that reads what really smart people do. So when you saw some of this stuff, Ben, and then we'll go into like what is all entails in this stuff. It's the new Batcast. I actually like that a lot. That's so much easier to say. What kind of are you seeing when you look at it? What kind of interested you, like what maybe surprised you when you looked at it? Because they're doing bat speeds, and there's squared up rates, and there's blast rates, and there's lengths, all kinds of stuff. So what are you seeing here?
Yeah, so like you pointed out, I think I saw the top 11 or so hitters like 10 times probably, and then the bottom ones maybe like half as often. So like poor Luis Arias just got crapped on the entire day. And but it's definitely cool that they can track this. There's a lot to it. So I forget, I think it was on the Baseball Savant homepage. It's an article by Mike Petriello, I think. Yeah, Mike Petriello. And it basically just breaks down the main new stats that come with the Batcast technology. And I don't think anyone was surprised to see Stan has the fastest bat speed in the majors. And it's actually by a lot. I have the one scatter plot of bat speed versus squared up rate on open right now. And he's miles away from O'Neill Cruz, who's second. And it made me go back a lot about how I remember growing up playing baseball and like being told things and being taught things about like how you want to, like a quicker bat is good for power. But then I also think about, well, you have a quicker bat, I feel like you should be able to make better contact because you can wait longer and make better decisions. But I think also the other thing that's valuable too is the swing length, which it might be hard for people to grasp what that is, but from what I understand, it's from where they start their swing. It's the barrel's movement until it makes contact. So also, I think Arias has like the shortest bat path because he's such a punch and Judy hitter. Use that cliche. And then Stan's is so long because of how, I think also because like he has the long arms. So it's like body type plays a role too. And it's just fascinating to see like what's going to come out of it. Like I know John Anderson, who I don't know if he does rotoballer work still, but he's always tweeting different stats and things like that. But he posted the average velocity, I believe, in different counts. I think Rob DiPietro did something similar. So like that's kind of interesting. But for like right now, I think this is more along the lines of how I feel about the like the pitch data that we have. I think it's good. Like it's interesting to know, but I don't know how actionable a lot of this is yet for fantasy. It's like a deeper level. And so like we have our exit velocity, we have our, for hitters, we have XFIP, K rate. So I think like those first level stats are the most important because they're most directly related to what we want, which are the fantasy stats. So like average, ERA, things like that. But as you get deeper, I think the correlation kind of diminishes as you get farther away from the surface stat to like digging deeper. So the pitching equivalent would be like, let's say like an induced vertical break, which I don't know a lot about it. I hear it talked about a lot, but I feel like that stuff's like a pitching coach wants to hear, and where they can actually do something about it, because a pitch can be really nasty, but unless the pitcher uses it more or in the right spot, it doesn't really help us in fantasy. And the same thing with the bat speed. Like, Stan has a problem with making contact, but he swings as hard as like, and so much harder than everybody else. And he hits so many homers because of it when he does make contact. So it's like, what are hitting coaches going to do with this data? I'm sure they have it. They know it's like, it's an MLB thing, but we use it for fantasy. And I'm interested to see how it grows and what else comes out of it.
A couple of things there. It's definitely more for like the analytical to actually use in real life, I think, more so, because Eno Saris's article I want to read on The Athletic, he had like Bagley and some other guys help him, and part of it was they talked to Matt Chapman, because Matt Chapman's atop this leaderboards, and Matt Chapman frustrates many fantasy managers around baseball because the results don't match. Like, always a hard hit guy, always doing this, and now he shows that he swings the bat hard and like all these things. And so they interviewed Chapman, they talked to him, and Chapman said that teams have had this information for a couple of years. Like, they know, like, they've been utilizing it for like what you said. Now, how many teams and how well it's used is a big question, because like we've seen with pitching with Rapsodo and other things, like, not all teams are created equal when it comes to using analytics. So that's a different thing. But Chapman knew about this stuff ahead of time, and kind of makes sense. You'd imagine that if MLB's baseball savant, I guess, say MLB's baseball savant came out with this, they've probably been testing it somewhere along the line, would be a hunch. And that would make sense. Now, it's like a lot of things is, I think it's like you said, it's the deeper stuff's great. I think the guys that stand out on either spectrum, as you said, could make sense. Like, I'm really curious about learning more, like, about, say, blast, because the weird part is this is not the blast that Alex Chamberlain came up with, which was a cool thing, but it's still a metric that I'm really curious about, because it talks about when the batter squares the ball up and but does it with a minimum amount of speed, like, it's super effective, like the efficiency of his swing. So it's not the idea, like you said with Stanton, he's always swinging hard. If he connects it, we know it goes 500 feet, but he strikes out a lot. So like the idea in my mind is, I want a guy that's like efficient and producing consistently. Like, we want a guy that hits 270 plus, maybe 300, but still has power. To me, could be totally wrong. This is why we're just this open discussion here. Blast could kind of lead us a little more in that direction in theory. Like, hey, you know, we go to the max EV on a page, we do this and that, this guy might not have it, but you look at a blast and now all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, he might, you know, have something here. Like, you look at the top blast, William Contreras is number one, Soto, Otani, Bobby Witt, those make sense. Like, Gunnar Henderson, but Yandy Diaz is there, Alec Bohm, Riley Green's up to 12th on this list on the season. So it's guys you'd expect to be there, but it's all like, so it's a lot of power hitters, but also a lot of average, maybe, because like Soto's not hitting a ton of bombs, but he's second in the league in blasts because he's always getting hits, as Ben watches probably nightly. So like, this is what they do. So I don't know. That's just another thing I was looking at, is the different options. Like, cause to me, swing speed, that stuff, like I almost tweeted it, but I didn't, because I'm a diehard golfer besides just baseball. They've been analyzing swing speed for like a long time now. Like, look at Bryson DeChambeau's, he built a YouTube channel on it. How fast can I swing and make contact so I can hit the driver 400 yards? Like, that's just common sense in my world. Like, but I'm looking forward to the other things that BatCast is going to bring to the table here. And I don't know if you want to hit on blast, you want to hit on something like the squared up percentage. Like, I think I saw someone tweet it. I think it was Eric Halterman. So what's the difference between the squared up and the sweet spot? Like, what are we doing here? Like, there's so many kind of little intricacies to this.
Right. Yeah. So I have the article from Mike Petriello still, and he broke up the batting average, the slugging, the wOBA, and the hard hit rate, and then a run value per 100 for all the different, like, the six main new stats. And it's basically based on, like, whether it's, like, for squared up or not squared up, and there's drastic differences. So it's like, so it seems like the points are, like, they've studied it pretty closely to figure out what the optimal cutoff is. And so this for everyone. So you mentioned blast. So I'll just read the definition. So a blast is the most valuable swing there is. This is straight from the article. It's a swing that is squared up and has a fast swing. So the squared up is another component, which we can touch on too. A squared up swing doesn't have a bat speed minimum. A blast does. So squaring up a ball is good. Squaring it up with fast bat speed is even better. And the blast is like when you're within 80%, I believe something is like 80%. No, that's squared up. So I'll explain what the squared up is. So it's like, so the the what's the exit velocity? Oh, it's the barrel. So it's like it's the equivalent of the barrel, but only for the swing speed. So any swing that is 80% squared up is considered squared up. So it's when you have the speed and the 80% of like the, they talk about like, so they, in their database, MLB, they have like the maximum velocity for a swing and a pitch, which is kind of incredible. Like they have that, and then they measure what actually happens in a percentage of like the exit velocity. And that's where the squared up metric comes from. And then they put that against the swing speed for the blast. Yeah. So it's, this is all brand new to me too. I'm just trying to understand.
We're spitballing here. So like, I hope it comes through to you guys. Like we're trying to have an open discussion that you can't really get on Twitter basically. Cause we're both intrigued by it, but there's so many layers to it type thing. That's just kind of fun to openly talk about, to kind of maybe we'll hit on something halfway through this.
Yeah. Maybe like after when we, when Bubba posts the show, I'll reply with the article that I'm talking about. So you can read it. It's a little lengthy, but he goes into pretty good detail about the different components, and a lot of it makes sense. It's just another thing to be wary of. And I remember looking at a player page earlier, and they've already incorporated the speed into the sliders for the normal Statcast stuff, which is good. I don't think they have all of the metrics yet, but you could probably easily get them on Savant.
Yeah, so I'm curious to see where that goes, because like you mentioned, the squared up to the blast, like the swing length, not really too worried about that per se. But
that's more of a team thing, I think. Like if you see someone who's like young and they have a long swing, then I guess that could be okay. Maybe this guy's gonna struggle. But for like an established player, I don't think there's a lot to it. Unless you're like new to fantasy and you're trying to learn as much as you can.
Yeah, for sure. And that was kind of one of the interesting things that I can't remember. I don't know if it was Brendan Tooman that tweeted out or somebody else. I apologize if I get this wrong, but it was really cool to see someone tweet out that Isak Paredes has one of the longest swings and one of the slowest swings in baseball. And I'm thinking, like you did, you played baseball, I played baseball. Usually to turn on a pitch and pull it, you got to be quick with the hands, usually. And all of his home runs are pulled home runs. So that just tells you he starts to swing even fast, like sooner, is what my assumption is. So now if I'm another team seeing this from a pitching side of things, I'm like throwing sliders low and away. Or something like that. Like that's my thought process. That's again not probably a fantasy angle, but more of a real life angle. But something that could come out of that, you see it, you're like, that's kind of surprising to me, actually.
Well, that's kept me away from Paredes this year. I didn't draft him anywhere. I had him on one team last year, and then like I knew what his gimmick was. And then when you look at the underlying data, like the other Statcast data that's not swing related, it's all like bottom of the barrel. And I think Rob D posted, I think he tweeted about Paredes because he's always been one of his guys. And I'm like, well, if pitchers ever figure out how to get him out, he's screwed, because he's not like doing it on talent. He found like a glitch and he's just taking advantage of it essentially. And the Yankees played the Rays and he really crowds the plate. But like you don't really notice the long swing, and I don't know. It's cool that we can measure it now just for like informational purposes, but like we said before, this acting upon it, you got to be careful about like how you use it.
Yeah. And then like the other thing is Brendan Tooma did tweet this one out, and it was very interesting, because like, a lot of the times like DFS and daily move leagues, like you do in Yahoo, even in, we have our biweekly splits, you see lefty righties and all this stuff. We're playing platoons. You're not sitting Ellie De La Cruz, but it was interesting. If you are in the belief, you got to hit your swing at a certain speed and this, that, and the other, his lefty and righty swings were completely like 3 to 4 mile an hour difference. Like that's a big difference when we're talking swings. Like you want to be probably, I'm just guessing, less than a half a mile an hour difference is what you want to be in reality to still be quite productive. To be, it was like 3 to 4 mile an hour difference. That's a chunk in that situation. And then if you go and look at his stats for those positions, or for those left versus right situations, there's kind of a showcase going on there. So that could be something to look at if you're maybe you have a trade offer coming your way and you want to go dig in on a player, like, should I trade for this guy? Well, there's something you can see real quick, but it's also, I guess, something we could use further down the line. Again, there's only so much information you can use in such a little amount of time. So like, this is cool stuff, but when you're trying to analyze for fantasy, it gets crowded quickly.
For sure. I think it's important just to know or understand it. And then when you see someone on Twitter tweet about it, then you can know what they're talking about. And you kind of mentioned it. So to compare with the bat exit velocity. So 95 plus exit velocity is considered hard hit. And for the swing, it's 75 miles per hour plus is the cutoff for like a fast swing. If anyone was curious. So that's like the apples to apples comparison between the two. And it's also interesting to see the difference in the bat speed versus the pitch speed. I think it's a lot of the power does come from the hitter, but just having the ball come in faster doesn't really matter. Like it's just like the mass of the bat and all that physics stuff. It's cool how it takes control of the event.
Yeah, because like when I grew up playing ball, it was always the harder the pitcher threw, the farther our ball would go. Basically, when we hit it, that was always which is true. But
and you want to shorten the swing ups.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. But that's why I never really thought. Because I always had a slow bat speed. That was just me. But, you know, if you square it up, so maybe I'd be a perfect example of this if they had StatCast back in the day. It'd be fun because I wasn't the guy like Giancarlo. I was probably more mid-pack or a little – I was probably more like Isak Perez, basically. So he wouldn't want to draft me either. But, it's fun to visualize these things. But like Adam says here in the chat, I don't see how anyone could quantify the results of something universally actionable. Wouldn't bat speed versus results vary drastically between each individual player, body type, bat path, etc.? I 100% agree. And that was kind of part of that, I think, the discussion we had on Twitter today. There's going to be tools to this to utilize eventually. People are going to find a way to utilize this. But it is, I think, person-to-person specific in a roundabout way. Because like even with pitchers, we can see some guys throw harder and more effectively. Some guys don't, but they can be really good pitchers because, you know, they throw softer, whatever. There's a million ways to analyze pitching. We've done that for a while. Hitting can be complicated, especially like you mentioned, Giancarlo is like a Greek god who swings a toothpick. Now you got, it would have been fun. The War Dog tweeted to me, I wonder what Tony Gwynn's numbers would look like. That would have been awesome. He's not the specimen of athlete, but the dude hits 400 and can drop bombs. Like, what was Ichiro's? Like, stuff like that would be cool to see. Mm-hmm. These guys that are amazing batting average guys, but when they needed to in their era, they could have pop. So it'd be kind of fun. So I think that's interesting to take a look at. I agree with Adam. Maybe you don't feel free to speak on that, but I think this is more of, it's a fun new toy, but like Ryan Bloomfield, my co-host on Bubba and the Bloom, when we were texting earlier today, he said, it's hard to get super excited about something. We have nothing to compare it to. We have no past numbers to say this is actually actionable. Like this number means you can like progress to this level type thing. Like we can look at it as it's a good average, you're above average, you're doing this, that, and the other. That's good. But like, we can't compare how this same hitter did last year. Did they improve? Did they not improve? Like those kind of things. What are their base numbers? We don't know. I guess these are our base numbers in theory. So that makes it a little trickier, I guess.
This will definitely help with aging. So like take Goldschmidt, yeah, for example. If we had this last year, I'm sure his bat speed's down. And you would think that they're either hurt or they're just getting older. And it's probably mostly getting older. I don't know how. So talking about Adam's comment, I agree. It's definitely more descriptive right now than anything. It's just describing how the hitters swing, and just how they're where they stand in the distribution across baseball. And then I don't know. I don't think I can add the comment, but Michael Cicchini was saying, I think squared up doesn't require ideal launch angle, but sweet spot does. I believe that's correct. There's no. It's just the speed and the contact quality. It doesn't matter. There's no angle involved. So yep, it's a good thing to point out.
Yep. Very good thing to point out there. So yeah, it'll be fun. Like I just pulled up Goldie's page, his average bat speed, 71.8. You said it's around 75 for league average. So he's above 75.
That's like the hard hit equivalent of bat speed.
Yeah. They're saying fast swing rates better than 75. He does that less than 21% of the time. Squares up the ball less than 23% of the time. Blasts less than 10%. Yeah, that checks out. That checks out from what we're seeing on the diamond. So there's definitely like stuff to it. I guess I kind of would use this more as a, if you see an issue and you're really curious to dig in deeper on a player per se, these could be some tools to dig into. I'm not sure I could use these as my starting point. This is kind of, I guess, where I'm looking. Could be wrong. Could be totally wrong. But real quick, because Pat Monahan says, I'm glad Stanton is tied or tops in bat speed. This was, nobody tries to use it predictably for anything else by itself. Yeah, like it's kind of what we're in the world is saying. But like, I don't know, do you have any other thoughts on the whole bat X?
No, I mean, I'm sure it'll I'm just curious to see how people like how long it sticks as being like the talk, I guess, or
a shiny new toy.
Yeah, for sure. Like people like John Anderson and even how like Ryan would incorporate it into his Bloom boards would be interesting to see eventually. As for me, I mean, I'm not going to mess with it right now, really. I mean, maybe I'll consider when the off season comes around and I work on my updating my sheet that I use, but I don't know. So we had this, I kind of had this back and forth with Colin, my shot, and he had a, I think because he had a question about, and we're going to get to it eventually, but so I still take for now exit velocity above this because you can have, look at sand, you can have a fast swing speed, but not necessarily have like a high exit velocity. Say like Stan, like say he just like collapsed and couldn't make, like he couldn't square up the ball, but you have to have fast bat speed for high exit velocity. So it's the exit velocity is still what we want, and the bat speed, I don't know, does that make sense what I'm trying to get at? Like ultimately you want the exit velocity, and like the bat speed doesn't guarantee you're going to have good exit velocity. I guess
that was kind of the, that was kind of what I think we were all, the three of us kind of talking there with calling my shot for a bit. Yeah, and that's kind of where my question was. Okay. It's like, okay, sure. A guy hits the ball hard, but he could still square it up because isn't squared. Okay. Apologize. Squared up doesn't matter launch angle, right? Just square it up.
Correct. Yeah. Squared up.
So if he hits in the ground, now he's not getting barrels. Okay. It's unproductive stuff. So like, it's just so many layers to it. And I guess we'd be more concerned if Stanton was like 75th on this list. That would be like a, okay, we got a problem. But I don't think it's a, it's more like you see a Luis Urias and you're like, yeah, he's a slap hitter. Like you said, punching Judy's, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what you're expecting. But it's those guys, like to me, it's more like the Matt Chapman stands out on the list. Okay, well, let's look into more of why does he keep checking all these boxes, but the success does not follow? Is it just because he's strictly, and this is where the data can be tricky. Is it because he keeps going opposite field? There, like that's what we've talked about forever. That makes hitting home runs tough and you're not pulling the ball. So yeah, like you said, it's actionable to an extent. But I liked the conversation with Colin Machado because he wanted to use it for like how does a prospect who struggled compares. Then he showed us the picture of Mazzardo and you and I both. I'm like, well, no, that's noted. And then you said something about
I think it was DJ Stewart.
DJ Stewart. I'm like, yeah, this might check out, time to drop type thing. But that I could see that being something to possibly utilize it for.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But we'll see.
It's a baby right now. It's in its infancy.
Yeah. And as Adam says, eventually it might be a tool to identify a player who is playing through an undisclosed injury. Yeah. No. And that's what I talked to Draft Cheat. Like we were tweeting back and forth. To me, the first inkling I thought is, and then you'd have to be able to build a chart that shows like, you know, month to month changes or game to game changes or whatever. But if you saw like a big drop in bat speed, like that to me, like you mentioned age, I think that's a good say, hey, maybe he's playing hurt. Like, you know, Ryan has that article every year. He talks about on HQ about guys potentially playing with injury. And we all speculate it. And we find out in November that the dude just had surgery. Like that could be a clear sign that something's not right if he's not swinging like he used to. But again, right now we have nothing to compare that to. So we don't know what he used to swing at. And we're just, this is it right here. So
I could also see like if someone's in a slump and their swing length is longer, that could be like, that's like, we can't fix that though. That's something that the team has to look at and say, okay, you're struggling. Let's look at your stack, your bat cast information. And okay, your swing's like half a foot longer now. We gotta clean that up. Like that's good for us to know, but I mean, we can't, like maybe you could help us stay away from someone like in a trade or something like that. But it's be careful with, like, I keep saying this, it's exciting new stuff. Just be careful with how you use it until we know more about it.
It's like when we look at, you know, pitch data, we look at pitch mixes and we're like, hey, this pitch doesn't work. Why do you still throw it 26% of the time? Like we're sitting there yelling it on the podcast. Tanner Bibee, stop throwing your fastball. Like simple stuff. But and the team's got that info, but the team ain't changing it. So it's like there's only so much we can do to point at the situation and see where it goes. But it'll be fun. It's a fun new toy. Eventually there'll be a purpose to it. There always will. Like I want to go watch Lance Brazdowski's YouTube video. That's supposed to be pretty cool. Sharp dude. Like this is where I joke about being a caveman, but I am very well admitting this is out of my pay grade. Like I want smart people to like play with this, go tinker with it, figure stuff out. You can come on the show if you want. I'll give you the platform, but we'll figure it out once you guys kind of figure it out. Let's put it that way. All right. Let's talk about some, last week we talked just April kind of surprise achievers with WRC Plus. Well, we broke it down to a 3-week span. So it's May 13th as we're recording. So we went back to April 22nd and we did the same exercise, WRC Plus. I wanted to do this because I do it a lot for like when I do my, the first pitch podcast, like if a guy has a good night at the plate, I'll try to give the last like 10 days, 14 days, see how they're doing, see if it's streaking. And because when you're trying to make moves, I've said this forever, playing DFS helps me in season long because I can kind of see guys heating up and take chances for cheap and then go from there. Now, 3-week sample is probably too late still, but it gives you an idea of what to look for, at least in my mind, because you'd be surprised. We've seen a lot of people tweeting out team WRC pluses lately because look at the A's. Yes, they've been very good, but who on the A's is very good? How does that help your fantasy team? Well, this is where it gets fun. So we'll kind of poke at this a bit and have some fun. And I'm a dummy because I changed to a player page while we were talking, but now I'm back. The number one player in WRC Plus over the last 3 weeks. And just remember, the Twins, the Guardians, the A's, these are like your big teams right now. The number one player is Max Kepler, who came off the IL about 3 weeks ago, give or take, which is pretty impressive. Dude's hitting .413 with 3 homers, 17 RBIs, 13 runs scored. A lot of these stats are like a .442 BABIP's unsustainable. But when you're looking at a guy like Max Kepler, your boy, who you came on the show a few weeks back and picked up, and then like it's working out pretty well for you based on the smile on your face over there. So what are your thoughts on what you're seeing with Max? Because I know there's going to be a slump because this just isn't sustainable, but I think long-term you're just fine.
Yeah, so he had a really rough slump start the year, Kepler. I think he was like 1-for-16, and then he got hurt. So I think, well, that's why I dropped him initially on the one team I had him, and then I think others followed suit. And but I know it was just a slump, and I forget what the injury was, but yeah, so it's great. Like I've loved having him in my lineup the last couple of weeks. It's been nice. So looking at the leaderboard here, it has BABIP, and this is kind of what we were saying last week too. A lot of these short window, like 2 or 3 week hot streaks, are usually fueled by a high BABIP, and Kepler's is .442. But so that's going to come down naturally, maybe like 300. I'm not sure what his career rate is. He's not very fast, so he's just crushing the ball right now. But his K rate and walk rate are only off by 3 percentage points. So that's the most exciting thing that I'm seeing right here, is that his play discipline is great. He's probably squaring the ball up tremendously. We can probably look at that now too. And yeah, so it's been great. He's kind of platooning still, but it's not like a heavy platoon. I think the Twins have more guys who are more susceptible to the lefty on lefty matchup, which keeps Kepler in there more often. And even if he does sit, he'll pinch hit. And it seems like whenever he pinch hits, he gets like a single and an RBI. So like he won't be starting. I'll check my team, and I'm like, oh, he's 1-for-1 with an RBI. So he's just dominating right now. He even has a steal, which is a nice bonus in this time period. And 3 homers. He doesn't have as many homers as the other guys that are behind him. But yeah, he's off to he's definitely come back strong from the injury, which is always good to see.
Yeah, this is funny because I just pulled up Kepler on the list here, the leaderboard, and his numbers are better, but close to Paul Goldschmidt. So that was surprising, but that can be because of the pre-injury slow start could have a lot to do with that. Again, I can't filter. That's one of my biggest bugaboos with Savant. Like, let me filter to my dates like I want, because I know you can, but you don't let me. So because I can go on the player page on Fangraphs, do game logs, and I can filter all I want, at least get barrels and hard hit and all that just lined out just fine. So but yeah, he's been very effective. His career BABIP is .256. So there's a lot that could be changing in that one, but I'm with you that the Twins platoon a ton. He's one of the last lefties to get platoon, but he still does, like you said. So there's a minor bit to keep in mind there, but interesting. Michael says also picked up Kepler cheap compared to the Kierstads. He's always good when he plays. Agreed. Always very, very good when he plays. All right. This next one is just a standout machine. And this is Brent Rooker. He's hitting a whopping .395 with 6 homers and 20 RBIs. Like, these are the guys that can change your seasons around real quick. And the thing I've said on other shows is Rooker, we've seen be streaky in the past, like very streaky. This is obviously a good streak. It's going to come crashing down at some point, but then he'll have another one of these sometime this season. It wouldn't shock me. So what are your thoughts here on what Brent Rooker has put together over this 3-week span? Again, another highly BABIP filtered person.
Yeah, definitely. His is 395. Striking out more than Kepler, 22%, but he's walking more too, 15%. So it's very close numbers, which is always good. I don't have any Rooker anywhere. And I think I heard Scott and Jeff talking about him on the RotoWire pod when I was listening earlier today. And yeah, he has 10 homers on the year, Rooker. But the one thing, and you kind of alluded to it, like it's going to come crashing down. He has 39 Ks and 106 at bats on the year. So that's definitely over 30%. If you factor in the walks, he only has 14 walks. I think it's just below 33% strikeout rate. So he's just seeing the ball well right now. And maybe you want to trade Rooker, but he had 30 homers last year and the A's are better this year than they were last year. Surprisingly. I think their high WRC plus you alluded to is primarily because of Rooker. He has a 222 over the last two or three weeks, but he was a great bargain. If you were able to add him in a shower league or draft him late, I had him in a decent spot going into the year, but I just saw the A's and I'm like, maybe it was a fluky thing last year. It kind of happened with Seth Brown a couple of years ago and it kind of scared me away. And I missed out.
Yeah, no, I have shares in my draft and hold formats. I love them in that format because I can plug and play and move in and out and do things like that. Don't have a ton in FAB. And that is definitely stinging at this point in time. Player I have a lot of, we're not going to talk about, but third on the list is Ryan Jeffers. That always feels good. 333 average with a 333 BABIP. That's cool. Living for that. Tucker's fourth. Otani fifth. Judge sixth. Bryson Stott is seventh. And this is just what I wanted to bring up. Hitting 333, two homers, seven steals, a 19% walk rate with a 17.5% K rate. Like, the walk rate shocked me when I saw this last night when I was talking about him on the podcast. And I was like, wow, he's walking a lot right now. Like, this is really good. He's hitting well and walking, which is, for a guy we want to steal, is awesome. The other reason I want to bring up Bryce's thought is, I know you've joined me on shows earlier in the year and others have. Panic early in the season is a big thing. And Stott was on everyone's panic meter. And it's one of those things, like, we try to say, if they're like a top, you know, X round pick, or you know, they've done this, they've shown they can do whatever, you kind of be a little more patient than just dropping guys. He wasn't like an 18th to 25th round pick. He was still a top 10 round pick in most formats. And now he's starting to show you what he can do. So I think, like, this is kind of the bounce back we wanted to see from the rough start to the season.
For sure. And I was looking, so on the leaderboard we have pulled up, it shows plate appearances, and he's one of the ones where you start seeing a dip. So the other guys all had at least 70 plate appearances. Stott has 63. So I think that kind of accounts for the platooning. But then I went to the Phillies roster resource since we're on Fangraphs, and he's actually played the last three games all against lefties because they had four in a row, which is kind of crazy. So they don't want him sitting for that long, which is good for his value because he's been a platoon guy most of the year. And now with Witt playing full time with the injury to it was kind of with Trey Turner. So yeah, Stott's playing shortstop now. The lineup's all out of whack in Philly right now, but it looks like he's going to play full time Stott. So that's good for his value if you're able to add him when he was dropped somewhere. And he's still hitting low in the lineup, like fifth, seventh, sixth. So it's going to hurt his counting stats. Also why he has fewer plate appearances, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, as long as he runs, he's going to do what you're hoping for if you drafted him.
Yep. It's good to see. And like, if they were platooning him for a bit, I think the injuries, then also the production might be kind of hopefully putting an end to that situation because he wasn't platooned last year. So let's hope they get away from that. Josh Rojas is eighth on this list. This is why I like these lists, because you get names like, whoa. Hitting 375, two homers, three steals, only 16% K rate, which is big. He's playing every day and leading off now that he started hitting well. So that's a big plus. He's let off literally, like, I'm not even going to try to count that, quite a bit lately. He has a 6-game hitting streak going into Monday night. A lot to like here from Josh Rojas. I feel like we say this once a year with Josh Rojas, but it seems like it might be a little longer period of time this time around. So what's your thoughts looking at Josh Rojas?
He's been a great DC play this year. I have him too, and I've been playing him the last couple of weeks. So he's playing third. So I'm trying to think of who he's replacing, right? No, he's always projected to start. Yeah. So it's Crawford is why Rojas is hitting leadoff. And I think Crawford should be back this week. So his time at the top, what day is it?
He should be back any day right now.
Oh, any day. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, Rojas will still be playing, but just right while he's hot, he has speed at third base. I think he's eligible for third base in NFBC at least. And it's always valuable. Not that steals are kind of hard to find this year. It's like power that's the issue. But it's funny, only 4 RBI and 7 runs in this time period. Everyone else around him has at least double digits in both. but it's Josh Rojas, but yeah. What do you expect?
Exactly. It's Josh Rojas. He's leading off, hit for average, and maybe something will follow along the way. You got Harper, you got Paredes, Lamont Wade, talked about him plenty, finally hit a home run on Sunday. Devers, Davis Schneider. I want to talk him, but we'll save that for the Fab period because he was heavily added this week. But he is 13th on this list, and I think he might be starting to play every day. We'll see how this one continues. O'Neill Cruz, for all his struggles, is 4th on this list, which is fun to see. Are you still in on O'Neill Cruz? I know there's like people wavering on Cruz, potential platoon with Cruz, because he was kind of sitting half the time versus lefties for a bit there. But over the last 3 weeks, 344 average, 4 homers, a steal, 21.5% K rate, which seems a bit low for O'Neill Cruz. If you want to talk plate appearances, that's another one that stands out there for the potential platoon. But at least we're seeing production here because it kind of dried up for a while. So are you, if you were an O'Neill Cruz guy, would you still be interested in him?
For sure. So I don't have O'Neill Cruz anywhere, especially in I was too scared of the profile in DCs, and then he got pushed up too high in Fab League. So it's always something with him and me not drafting him. But he has 2 homers in each of the last 2 weeks, week 6 and 7. Looking at NFBC weekly breakdown. And last week, he only had 1 strikeout and 19 at-bats. So that's awesome. That's probably why his K rate is as low as it was. I think you mentioned 25%. And like the other weeks, like he had a couple 11s in a row. He had a 9 strikeout week. In the week 6, so it was 8 Ks. And that's like 20-plus plate appearances. So it's a pretty high rate. But I don't know. Like he barely played last year. Cruz did. And he could just be getting his feet underneath him right now. And he's too good to give up on. And he's like, I think I mentioned before, he's one of the at least swing speed leaders. I think he's second or third, and it makes sense why he has contact issues because of that. He swings so hard and I think he'll be fine. He'll be productive.
Yep. O'Neill Cruz is 2nd on this list. So yes, he crushes it. That's good. I'm looking at it again now that I keep paying more attention. Stanton swings over 75 miles per hour 98% of the time. That is ridiculous. No wonder he gets oblique injuries all the time. A few more down the list here. Alec Baum has been crushing it. Willie Castro, a lot of us have said for a long time, it plays regularly. Fantasy viable. Not sure 354 was it, but the power speed is fun. Rizzo's 6 home runs over the last 3 weeks, hitting 300, which is really, really good to see. You got Freeman. I want to hit on JJ Bleday because I got some feedback in my my Fab article this week when I said, hey, him and Kelenic. I talked about their streaky hitters. They're streaking right now. Here you go. Well, Bleday over the last 3 weeks, 258 average. Okay, whatever. 267 BABIP. That checks. But 4 homers. And more importantly to me, when I saw Bleday's profile, 18% walk rate, 16% strikeout rate. He's going to face a ton of righties this week. Like, he's producing right now enough. He's hitting like 2nd or 3rd every game. Like, there's something there on a good A's team at this point in time.
Yeah, and so I looked at Russia Resource. They don't have him in a platoon, and unfortunately, they haven't played a lefty in the last 6 days, at least starter, so that doesn't really help. But, yeah, like, hitting 2nd's great, right in front of Rooker, so, and behind Toro, who's been on fire as well. And, Bleday's done all his damage the last couple of weeks. He only had 1 homer through the first 5 weeks, I think. And now he's got 4 in the last 2. So he's definitely getting hot. I don't have Bleday anywhere. I think I had him in bid list at some point throughout the year, but I just never landed on him. And he's one of those prospects that kind of took a while to break out. It seems like he's doing that now.
Yep. Let's get a few more here as we round out the top 30. Wilson Contreras, T's and P's. That was fun while it lasted. Brandon Nimmo's up to 4 homers over the last 3 weeks. That's been a bit of a surprise. I saw some stats about his barrel rate and whatnot get tweeted out there today, so that was good. Carlos Santana of the Twins, 7 home runs over the last 3 weeks, 278 average, 15% K rate. Are we a believer in Carlos Santana?
I don't know. He's so old.
It's tough.
Yeah, like he's on the Pirates, right?
Twins.
Oh, Twins now, that's right. Yeah, he was on the Pirates last year.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, once they get healthy, I can't see him playing full time. I don't know. They have, like, I remember, like, going when he got signed there, it kind of pushed Castro out of a full-time role, but now Castro is as hot as anybody, like you were talking about. They'll get Royce back hopefully for more than one game. And they have all the platoon. I mean, the one thing that will save Carlos's playing time is he can hit right-handed. He's a switch hitter. And so like he'll play probably versus most lefties, but when they have everyone going, I don't know if he's going to play enough versus right-handed pitching.
Yeah, that is a great point. He's getting the job done for now, but we'll see once hopefully Royce Lewis comes back someday soon. A couple more here. Max Muncy's 23rd on the list. Jurickson Profar still 24th, hitting .343 over the last 3 weeks. But a guy I wanted to hit on, you hit him earlier, the third Oakland Athletic in the top 25. The third Oakland Athletic in the top 25. Abraham Toro hitting .356 with two homers. Counting stats kind of suck. But more importantly, less than 13% K rate, which is a big standout. So he's helping you on average, not really doing a ton else right now. So it's kind of like an empty stat, maybe still like you see the batting average and you want to, I think, take a chance, but he might still be stuck in deeper formats. I don't know. But I know Michael Cicchini in the chat here brings him up when we do our Fab show with Bloomfield. So what was your thoughts when you see a Toro profile like this?
Yeah, I had Abraham Toro in some of my bid lists this past weekend. Only for like $2 though. I think I took him out because I looked to see why he was playing so frequently. And it's because of the Zach Geloff injury. And I think Geloff is almost back.
Started his rehab assignment. Yeah.
Yeah. And also with Toro. So you look at what he's done over the last couple of weeks. Week six, he was 9 for 22, .409 average. And then last week, 13 for 32 with a .406 average. And it's like it's this BABIP drip field right now, and like you said, there's no homers, no speed. I mean, he has four homers in a year, almost one a week, which is it's good. And I remember being interested in adding Toro in the past, but I think it's just like a BABIP thing right now, and he's not going to be playing or at least hitting leadoff for that much longer. So yeah, I know Curlin was playing him this week, or he was going to add him, or both if he didn't already have him, Toro. But yeah, I think he's going to fall off kind of quickly. His BABIP was .393, so it was definitely high over the last 3 weeks, but he's definitely more of a 15 play Toro is than anything else.
Yeah, what I'm curious about with Toro and the A's is they have so many moving parts. Like Toro was playing second and third when JD Davis was out and Geloff was out. Now Davis comes back, Toro's primarily at second base, Nevin moves over to first base, Noda went to AAA. Nevin's cooled down substantially. Toro was playing some first base earlier in the year. Like, does Toro go to first base? Now Nevin goes back to platooning with Seth Brown in the outfield. Like, there's or does Toro platoon with JD Davis at third base because Davis isn't doing anything? Like, there's so many moving parts to try to keep Toro's bat in the lineup. Not sure how they're going to do it. It's just if I'm an A's team, I'm going to play all the streaks that I can right now. Keep this good time rolling. Like, if I'm in that dugout, I've talked about it a lot. If I'm in that dugout, I'm doing everything in my power to throw middle fingers at that box upstairs. So, like, if we can do anything to do it, I'd be all about that. It'd be a fun little deal. Just to round it out, Jake Cronenworth's 26th, continually getting the job done. Tauchman's 27th, Ozuna 28th, JT Realmuto 29th, and the GOAT, William Contreras, at number 30 to round things out. You know, we have so many catchers on that list. It's a beautiful thing to see. We're looking catchers at baseball. A's. I did catchers and A's, baby. Baseball in 2024. If you like playing fantasy baseball, you just look at that list and you want to shake your head and go, this is what I'm dealing with right now. It's a fun deal. And here he is. Michael's on here. This is it. Toro will go to third base. They called up Harris, but he's not good. Could stick at leadoff, Geloff, two hole. Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts. And for once, they actually have viable options, which is really, really weird to see.
I'll just say with Toro before we move on, not that he's going to be what he's always been, but his averages by season, so from 2019 to 2022, were .218, .149, .239, .185. So, I mean, he's 27, so maybe he's figured it out, but that's why I'm being cautious as well, because, like, I feel like it could be one of those ads where you add him and then you miss everything if he's still available.
No, I get it. That's why I've been kind of, like, scared each and every week with Abraham Toro, because it's fun, but it's one thing when you're streaking like a rooker or something and dropping bombs and driving in 20 runs. But when you're strictly a batting average streak, that's when I get a little scared of what's taking place out there. Because if you're not even hitting for average, you're just crushing my entire situation. And nobody wants to be a part of that. All righty, let's talk about week 8 Fab. This will be a fun one here. Not as exciting potentially as last week with all the call-ups that Ben and I avoided. But there are some fun ones here in week 8. So as usual, we'll talk NFBC, OCs, 12-team formats. Ben plays a lot of 15s too, so he'll have his impacts there. And we'll go through a handful of names here before we hit some listener questions and head on out of here. But the top added player this week in online championships was one Robert Gasser. Picked up in 173 leagues, $150 max. Of course, we have a $1 minimum for Robert Gasser. That's fitting. Gasser was really good in his first start. I didn't know what to expect because control was a major issue at AAA in a handful, like 3 starts he made. But 6 shutout innings with no walks and 4 Ks against the St. Louis Cardinals. He gets the Pittsburgh Pirates this week. And then there's questions on how the rest of that rotation goes out. Does he stick? Because if not, if he sticks, he hits Miami next week, which is even sweeter. Like, how cool is that? You get a struggling Cardinals team, you get the Pirates, and then you get the Marlins. Like, that's what teams should do for young pitchers, Ben. But what's your thoughts on this Gasser situation?
If only it were that easy every time someone gets called up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, poor Christian Scott gets the Phillies. But he did all right, though. So I wasn't
going. He survived.
But, yeah, 8 Ks was nice. But, yeah, this is about Robert Gasser. So, yeah, Gasser had a great start, like you mentioned. 12.7% swinging strike rate, no walks. Got lucky with the BABIP left on base, of course. It's just a one-start sample. I was in on Gasser. I think I ended up being like the runner-up a couple times. He only went over $100 in one of my 3 main events, I believe, if I recall correctly. I was like in the $60 range probably. After what they did with Tyler Black, I was kind of worried about how long Gasser would be up. I mean, I think as we've mentioned, I've mentioned on here with you before, the Brewers rotation is pretty garbage right now. So that's why Gasser's up. And so it was good to see, I think it was Tobias Myers who got sent down to make room when Peralta came back from the suspension. So as long as Gasser is going to performs, I think he's going to be up. He doesn't throw hard. That's one thing that kind of differentiates him from Christian Scott and even like Jared Jones and Paul Skenes. He's more of a softer, like 92 mile per hour average fastball velocity guy. And the walk rate was only in 12 innings. He had 6 in the minors this year, so I wouldn't worry too much about that really. He did have 50 and 135 last year, so that's getting close to being an issue. But like you said, if you do have Gasser in a trade league, maybe see what you could get for him after if he dominates the next couple of starts against the bad opponents, because like the hype will never be higher than right now, I don't think.
Yep, I think it's a good point. I'm with you. I was kind of nervous on, does he stick? Is he just filling in for Freddie Peralta? Like, what are we doing here? Like, their rotation is garbage, as you mentioned. But, like, what are we really doing in this scenario, which is really, really tough? Bobby's in the chat saying Adrian Hauser is starting Wednesday. So, okay, so a lot can change. Like, what I'm looking at, so Gasser's not starting on Wednesday now? That's what we're saying?
I think something about Scott.
Oh, okay. I thought Howard's were pitched on the Mets. I'm like, what are we doing right now?
Gasser's got the Pirates on Wednesday, and Scott. Okay, yep, he does. Bad. Yes, he was right. Scott has the Marlins on Friday. Let's go.
So they moved him around. That's huge because yeah, Scott was originally scheduled for Philadelphia, and I saw the tweet earlier in the day that Adrian Hauser was pitching Wednesday, and I'm like, wow, the Mets just want to throw one away. Is that what we're going with?
They're asking to lose.
Again, they're also taking care of their kid, giving him a couple days off and a better matchup, which not the worst thing you can do. So good call on that one, Bobo and beyond. All right, David Schneider. Wanted to save this one for this part of the show. Picked up in 153 leagues, as high as $82, as low as 1. Recently, people said, oh, you only want Schneider because he's a platoon guy, this, that, and the other. For the most part, that's been true. But of late, with injuries, he's playing daily. He's leading off a lot. He's even leading off, I believe, on Monday night or hitting second. George Springer's missed a lot of time, so Snyder's been playing in left field during most of these games. Dalton Varsho moves to center field. That changes things a little bit in the conversation. And over his last 12 games, Schneider's hitting .368 with a homer and 2 stolen bases, still striking out over 31% of the time, but a 17% walk rate does help at the leadoff spot. So Schneider was a popular guy this week, obviously. If he's playing every day towards the top of the Jays order, I can see the argument. It feels like it's more of a seat filler for now while Springer's hurt, but maybe there's more to it. So what's your thoughts on Schneider this week?
Yeah, so he was someone that was not available in 15, so I didn't have to think about adding David Schneider. He's already added everywhere. And so you mentioned he was on the list earlier. I'm trying to find something stood out. Yeah. So he has a 28.8% K rate over the last 3 weeks. Schneider does with a 483 BABIP. So that's even higher than Kepler's. And yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. Schneider was like, he was on the short side of platoon, I think, at some point going into the year, potentially, because they had Biggio sticking around. But yeah, so even without the Springer injury, Schneider's been playing. Well, it's an illness for Springer. And yeah, I don't know. Like, it's his good power. He's actually stolen two bases over the last 2 weeks, Schneider has, which is nice to see. I think as long as he keeps playing, like, the second and outfield eligibility is very nice. It's a good back end of the bench player to have. He's kind of been consistent with his playing time all year, ranging between 11 and 17 at bats per week. So he's kind of playing pretty regularly. But I don't know. Like, the average won't be there, I don't think, because of the BABIP so high right now. And on the year, he has 29 Ks and 90 at bats. So he has about a 30% carry for the year, too. So just be cautious with the average. And he should be all right, though.
Yeah, I love his power, especially versus lefties. He smokes left-handed pitching. Like, that's why he was a good platoon piece to have on the right weeks. But if he's playing every day, I still don't mind him, just because he could run into a hot streak like he is right now. But, man, those lefty weeks, whew, good stuff right there. Johnny DeLuca. Johnny. 152 leagues, as high as 147, as low as a buck. In its first, he's not in the lineup on Monday after playing 10 straight games since coming up from the IL, which is just like the total fantasy baseball, are you kidding me, moment. But DeLuca hitting 286, homer, two stolen bases. What I love to see, 15% K rate with a 9% walk rate since he was called up. That is absolutely beautiful stuff there. I picked up Johnny a lot already last week for cheap, grabbed him in a couple more places this week. Once they started playing him every day, I'm like, okay, we're in. Like, they had enough of Jose Siri's. Okay, great defense, but no offense. Now we'll play Johnny. We're good. His defense is good enough. We want to score some runs. So I love Johnny. I think there's a lot of talent here. When DeLuca and Pepia were traded in the Glasnow deal, I'm like, this is the stuff, folks. So yeah, I was a big fan of Johnny this week.
Yeah, I think he's available in a couple of my main events. I didn't bid too highly on him. I'm just scared of the Rays. Like, we'll get to our adds and drops. I made a mistake potentially, Rays related, of course. But so looking at their lineup the last few days, there's a lot of gaps. So if you look at the roster resource page, and they have, I'm sorry, Mike, we're already on Fangraphs. I still use your page. There's a lot of empty gaps for roster positions for a lot of their players. So they're constantly shuffling people in and out. Like, I dropped Ahmed Rosario yesterday because Brandon Lau was supposed to be back.
And he was platooning.
Right. And then Richie Palacios has been playing second base, but he's an outfielder. So they have Josh Lowe back now, the Rays do. So they have Lowe, mm-hmm. Arozarena, Lowe kind of had the platoon thing, but they kind of, I think they want to play him full time. I mean, he sat Saturday versus a lefty, but I think they're going to, even last year, Lowe was playing more full time against lefties. So that's two outfield positions. They've been playing Harold Ramirez at DH. So Palacios is a left-handed hitter, and they went out and got him as well. And they're playing, they like him so much, they're playing him in the infield now. Then they have Rosario, who I mentioned. And then there's Siri, who we mentioned. He had a homer against the Yankees the other day. He's played the last three games in center, so maybe he's playing again. I just didn't want to mess with the outfield of the Rays if I didn't have to. And I guess I get the talent is there with DeLuca, but we know the Rays love to shuffle guys around constantly. And that's what kept me away from trying to add them.
Nope, I get it. I respect it. The infield one's the fun one, because it kind of dawned on me and Ryan on Thursday night's Fab Pod, like, hey, Rosario's platooning with Palacios at second base right now, and Brandon Lau is on a rehab assignment. Like, he could be back Tuesday, Wednesday. He's supposed to come back pretty soon. He went deep on Sunday. Like, he's doing Brandon Lau things. He was actually kind of platooning too, so who knows what's going to happen there. But I said, yeah, with Palacios, like, I love him because they're facing all these lefties this week. But if Lau comes back, and then where's Palacios going? Because, like you said, the outfield is kind of crowded. So there's a lot of moving parts there in Tampa Bay, which could leave some people unsettled this week. I love Johnny. I hope he gets to play. All my bids were cheap, thank God, because people should know me by now. It's kind of how I work. But I think he's the best. I'd rather have him over Siri all day long. So hopefully that comes to fruition when all is said and done. All right. Abraham Toro was the fourth most added player. Someone paid $77 for him. We don't need to talk about Toro, though. Let's talk to the fifth most added player, Kyle Manzardo. Picked up in 137 leagues, as high as 170 as low as a dollar. Manzardo has played in 7 games, all games last week since getting called up, which is a plus. They played him every day. That was good. Hitting the back end of the order primarily. Bad spot. He's got 3 hits, 1 double in those 3 hits. He's hitting 176 with an over 41% strikeout rate. Some will point to the 0% barrel and 30% hard hit rate, if you'd like. These are some not good things, Ben. So what are you looking at when you see Kyle Manzardo? Because I'm looking at this going, this just feels like another struggling prospect that might need some more time.
Yeah, I was going to say Matt Mervis again or something like that.
Yeah.
I had bids for Mervis, but they were like $12, not $170, just because I could use a jolt at corner. And if I got lucky and he started getting into the swing of things, then okay, I made out. But like he's not hitting high in the lineup for the Guardians. He's like 8th, 9th, 6th. They have him 6th right now on roster resource. You mentioned the poor quality of contact. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, as most listeners probably know my style by now as well, I'm usually avoiding these rookie hitters, if at least for the high prices. It's just so hard to make the transition from AAA to the majors, I think. And you never know who's going to succeed and who's going to struggle.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. Quite concerning. Matt Manning was picked up in 136 leagues, as high as $102. He got called up to take Kenta Maeda's spot in the rotation because Maeda's on the IL with a viral illness. Manning gets the Marlins this week at Arizona on Sunday. Nice little two-step. And I would assume Maeda would be out longer, but we'll see. If Maeda's out longer, gets Toronto next week. I don't have a ton on Manning. He had 4 runs in each of his last 2 starts, but he also has 17 Ks and 17 innings pitched this year. Were you interested in a guy like Matt Manning?
I was. Once I heard that he was getting called up on Twitter, I added Manning to my pitching bid list, and he could even stick around because Maeda had the 1 good start.
I'm with you.
There's a chance that Manning does stay in the rotation when Maeda comes back from being sick. And so, I mean, I didn't get Manning. I don't think I bid high enough for him. I got somebody else instead, so I don't know if I would have got Manning. We'll get to that when we talk about our ads. You probably know who I got instead. You could guess. I was in on Manning. Like, he definitely had a good start when he was pitching earlier in the year, but I just didn't get him.
Yep, that's fair. I'm a Manning guy. This is one of those where I've talked about it many times. Sometimes I prefer life over fantasy. I was enjoying a weekend of Mother's Day and other things, and I missed the news on Matt Manning coming up over the weekend. So
it was like 9 o'clock, and I changed my I updated my list. I think that's how late it was.
We were out to dinner, so there's no way I was seeing that one. That wasn't happening. 6 o'clock our time. That was a no go. But I don't know how expensive I would have gone anyways. Like, I agree, he should stay in over Maeda, but we know how money talks in baseball. So we'll see on that one. Couple other ones real quick here, like Yvonne Herrera. We know my story with him. Leody Tavares, he should be added in all formats. John Singleton, who's I wanted to ask you about, picked up in 100 leagues. As high as $28, as low as a buck. I honestly thought he'd be higher than $28 because he's playing pretty much every day since Jose Abreu went back to, I just call it rehab, because he went to the spring training facility. Average is not great, 225 over like his last 12 games, but 4 home runs. What I love to see, though, Ben, is he's not even striking, like, less than 20% K rate. Like, that is great. And Ryan Bloomfield's checking and saying he just got Feltnered. I'll just get to Feltner. Yeah, no, we're good. So what's your thoughts on John Singleton? Because this is one of those where it feels like it's sticking, but it's kind of the combination. Your team needs to be okay with batting average to take on a player like this.
No, I think that's fair. So he was actually available in the main event again this week. So he was like an ad, or I thought about him in previous weeks, Singleton. But I was willing to take the batting average risk because I need a little power boost in a couple of my teams. And it's kind of wild that he's playing every day for the Astros now, like 10 years later than from when they signed him originally. But so I pulled up his Savant page. He has 96th percentile of chase rate, only 18.4%. For someone who's been out of baseball for a while, that's kind of incredible to come back and be seeing the ball that well. His walk rate's excellent. About league average with the power metrics. So, I mean, but it's kind of short to right field in Houston. He's playing, like you said, every day. So, yeah, I was in on Singleton if I needed power. And it's interesting to see him in 12s also being added as well.
Yeah, no, he was in my waterfalls. We'll double check ads. I don't think I got him anywhere, but I was interested just in the power aspect to like stream it while it's going. Cause like you mentioned that, like I saw the strikeouts, you mentioned the qual, like the swing metrics. I'm like, he's actually looking competent up there right now. Like that makes me feel good. He's hitting usually fifth or sixth in the lineup, a very good, you know, if Kyle Tucker stops driving everybody in, then Singleton will have a chance on things, which will be fun. But I could definitely see that. Adam in the chat here saying, I added John Singleton for $2 to $5 in leagues where I had Goldie CES. I was also surprised. Yeah, that's a great space to add him too. Like I think in my CES lineups or leagues where I had like a poor corner infield, I was looking at a guy like Singleton to kind of, you know, stop the gap there for sure. All right, we'll do one more here real quick. We don't need to talk Taj Bradley. He was a beast, should have been added everywhere. He got as high as 391 in OCs. Josh Rojas, we already talked about. Chris Paddock, I don't know if we need to talk about him. Added in 76 leagues, as high as 112. He's got a two-step this week, which is really good. I know I added him. We'll talk about him when, at that point. But he gets to face the Yankees and then at Cleveland this week. Next week, he's got Texas, which is not great. But he's improved dramatically of late. I don't know if you want, you can, if you have a few thoughts on Paddock, the floor is yours.
I am playing Paddock in a main event this week. So I'm glad I held on to him because I was considering cutting Paddock when things were looking really rough, but I'm like, who else am I going to add in a 15 team main event where who has the upside that Paddock does? So I have, I think it's the last 2 weeks in my, I downloaded from Fangraphs the other day. He only has a 4% walk rate, 4.3% over the last 2 weeks from like the weekend. 21.4% K minus walk. So anything over 20 is excellent. His Sierra was 3.09 in that period, 2.96 XFIP, 13% swing and strike rate. And like, I think he's kind of getting back from the surgery, the Tommy John surgery. And I think he had like double digit Ks in two consecutive outings or close to it. I'm excited to see what Paddock can do. I'm not too worried about the two step. I mean, he could have like 15 Ks the way he's been striking batters out. The White Sox was in April, the 10K game he had, but he's got a win in four straight games. The Twins are on fire, so he's going to get run support. The whip might be a little iffy. He gave a lot of hits a couple times the last couple outings, 8 and 2 of the last three starts, but only 3 walks. And so he only has 4 walks in his last 5 games, Paddock does. So that's awesome with a lot of Ks. So I'm excited. I think he should be added in most leagues right now.
Bloomfield said Paddock has a 4.34 ERA, would be 2.53 without his April 16th start, 9 earned runs. I know it counts, but damn, that sounds like Bloomfield's writing his yearly article right now. If you take out that one start, here's what the numbers would be.
I was going to say, that's going to be a Bub and a Bloom episode soon, right?
Yeah, it's probably, it sounds like a Tuesday night recording potentially coming at you right there. Because I always give him a hard time because we find guys like that, like, ah, man. But yeah, no, that's why I had Paddock. I wrote about him this week in my Fab thing. I added them at least one league, if not more. I know I put bids in on them everywhere he's available. I was very much interested in the improvements. So I feel like it's Velo's been up too. Michael Cicchini says missed on Singleton, but got Sosa, Edmund Sosa. He's talking about some power speed playing every day for the Phillies. Yeah, with Turner out, Whit Merrifield and Sosa are seeing a ton of playing time. So definitely guys to keep an eye on. All right, Ben, it's that time of the show. Let's talk about our ad drops for the week. If you have a chance here. You got your mains. We'll do my 15s. Then we'll do your Yahoo 12. And then I'll do my 12s. We'll have some fun there. So when you are ready, the floor is yours.
All right, let's go OLAC first this week. So my OLAC, starting right off the bat, Mason Black dropped Tyler Alexander. $48, run up of 8. So I was in on Mason Black this week, as everyone will hear and as you already know. I won Johan Rojas, next ad. Dropped Harrison Bader. $34, run up of 14. Kind of the same player, but I feel like Rojas is playing more often than Bader, and he's actually stealing more than Bader is up. So it's kind of like the upgrade version of Bader, which I was happy making that switch. I got Brian Ramos in this league, dropped Ty France. It is a 15, but I had France on too many teams. I had to cut him somewhere. $16, run up of 12. I added Corey Lee. This is one of my Wilson Contreras teams. So, but I held on to Wilson here at least. So I dropped Trevor Rogers, adding Corey Lee, $8, run up of 1. So that's that OLAC. Going on to main event 1. So this is the Rays ad I was alluding to. So I added Brandon Lau. I dropped Ahmed Rosario, $96, okay. Run up of 32. So I was a little aggressive, but so I was looking, I looked at his rostership percentage Lau's in the main event, and he was like 97% rostered. So I was one of the, like, two leagues that had the chance to add him, and he was about to come back. I think he was He felt something in his oblique. I was looking at his player page because I was going to start Lau this week, but I'm setting him now for the first start, which is upsetting because they have four righties on the schedule. But so hopefully he's still he's healthy because I think he felt something in his oblique. But if he hit the homer, I mean, he should be all right. I mean, he could have hurt it on the homer swing. Who knows? So hopefully it's nothing seriously. But with like Rosario, him being the drop, I saw it kind of like the writing on the wall, especially with Lowe coming back, Brendan Lau coming back. I don't know. I didn't really want to drop Rosario. I might be the only team that did drop him. But like I mentioned how crowded the outfield was and like the infield's getting crowded. I just don't think he's going to play as much as I want on this team. I need more of the like steady production. And I don't mind adding Lau because of the injury, but it's just that I tripled the runner up, which is whatever. But I think he was worth it. Maybe people were more wary about the oblique thing than I was, or I don't know. You're eating and you're busy running up the fab, but I don't think anything really came out. I kind of saw a note, but I kind of shrugged it off. I don't know. I thought he was playing and I figured he was fine, but we'll see.
Yeah. There wasn't much that came out. I'll tell you that much. I was surprised that it came down to what occurred on that situation.
Yeah. So that was the first ad in this main event. Then I had Mason Black again, $46, run up a 39. So that was a little bit closer. I dropped Colin Ray in that move. Then I also added Brian Ramos again. I dropped Tyler Nevin. Of course, he did nothing for me once I added him. $8 run up of nothing. I added Sean Bouchard, not to start this week, but just to have, because he's been playing a little bit more regularly for the Rockies. I dropped Mike Yastrzemski, $6 run up of two. And then this is my other Wilson Contreras team. I added Jose Trevino, and I dropped Wilson. I decided to make the cut in the main event. $4, no backup on Trevino. I wanted Patrick Bailey, but I was the runner-up. I was upset that I didn't get Bailey. But that's all right. Main event number two. I also added Mason Black, 44-19. I dropped Quintana. And then my other ad was Eddie Rosario. I dropped Yastrzemski again, $8, $1 runner-up. I don't get how Rosario is doing so well, and he still has a 197 average or 179. Like, he's been on fire, and he's still under 200. It's kind of wild.
That's
last main.
Yeah, sorry. Keep going.
Yep. I've been a little long-winded, but I'll be quick here. So I added Mason Black again for the on 4-for-4, $24, dropped Tyler Wells, we're number of 10. And then I added another giant, Casey Schmidt, dropped Jack Leiter, $2, no backup. And then I added Jake Rogers for Miguel Amaya, $2, no backup.
No, that works. The catcher situation was a struggle this week. That's why I was kind of curious where you were going, because I had some very, very tricky issues on some of those. We'll get to those here eventually, but we'll start with my 15s. The OLAC this week, I only made one move because everyone else beat me out, but I added Brian Ramos. He was a priority of mine. Basically, it went like Ramos and Singleton for corner infield ads for me. That was like my if you read my stuff, you listen to my Thursday show with Brian, you read my article, you kind of have an idea of where I'm going if you pay attention to things. And I got Ramos, dropped Will Brennan, 6-0, so no runner-up bid on that. No one still likes Ramos. Like, I was afraid I missed something when I really dug in there. So in my main event qualifier, added Ramos, dropped Carlos Santana, because the seven homers and stuff, it's been like the last week and a half has been quiet Santana again.
Did you get the homers out of him when he was on fire?
Exactly. 14-8 on that one. So at least there's some action on that one. We'll see I'm curious to see what Santana goes for next week, just for fun. Then I'll do the two listener leagues real quick, two listener auctions. Listener auction one, added Patrick Sandoval, dropped Alzolay 4-0. That is for the future, not for this week. I just got him for cheap now. He got hit around on Sunday, but I like the improvements we've seen Sandoval making, where in a 15 where pitching's pretty weak, he could be a off and on bench streamer type. And then my other auction, Brian Ramos, drops Sal Frelick 17-1. Frelick's not really playing. Him and Perkins are kind of in a mess right now. And then I added Vidal Brujan, dropped Tim Anderson 7-3 in that one. All right, what are you seeing in your 12s?
Yeah, so on my Yahoo 12-team daily league, we covered the Monday ads last week. So during the week, I added Mike Yastrzemski for a stream. I dropped Savali, so you'll be happy to – I got Gasser in this league, so I could afford the cut. And
good cut.
Yep, then I added Danny – so this is funny. So in Yahoo, MJ Melendez is catcher eligible, so I added Danny Jansen. I dropped Melendez. I couldn't take any more 0-for-4s from Melendez, even – like he's playing every day going 0-for-4. It just kills your weekly average.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Well, actually, it's on base and slugging, but same thing. then I added Pham. So it was funny on your show with Ryan on Thursday. I was listening, and then I'm like, you were talking about how Pham should be added everywhere. I'm like, I wonder if he's available in my 12 teamer. Sure enough, he was available, so I added him. Drop Wade.
Yeah,
I didn't even think to look for him before. And then I also dropped Jason Adams, so I got Seiya off the IL, and Adams not closing anymore. So I'm running with two closers right now. Well, one and a half, but had to make some roster space.
Gotcha. All right, my 12s. We're going to get to one of these 12s where you guys might have some questions about my priorities in life, but I made some big cuts in some of these leagues. First OC, added Johnny DeLuca, dropped Kyle Gibson. This is where they're great. I put $11 on thinking, you know, after getting them for $2 last week, that people might pay more. No runner-up bid. You guys are unbelievable. Like, silly stuff. And then I added Jose Miranda, dropped Brett Beatty 3-0. Miranda's playing every day and playing pretty well. So as long as Lewis is out, that's fine with me. Jake Cronenworth was available in this league. He went for $237. That's what I was hoping for, but was not paying that price.
What did you bid on?
I think I bid like 56 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I liked him a lot, and like, I knew I needed to bid a lot, but I was like, I can't. I only have like 550 left. I need some money as the season goes on, boys. Like, this is not the time to do it. Then the OC3 is the fun one. OC2, I added Chris Paddock, dropped Ben Lively 22-7. At least we had a runner up there. And then I added Michael Massey, dropped Kevin Ginkle 5-0, as I needed a middle infielder because Dansby Swanson's on the IL. OC3 is where it gets fun. This is where rubber met road scenario. And added Brian Ramos, dropped Nixon's 8-0. Cool. Added Josh Rojas, dropped Ian Happ, who's been just about as bad, if not worse, than Melendez. And in a 12-team OC, that's the kind of moves that they sting, but I'd rather stash some of the IL guys I had than hold on to Ian Happ, essentially. Like, it was that bad.
I had Ian Happ in my Yahoo 12-teamer, and I've moved to not dropping him. It's also an on-base and slugging league, so he has a little more value there. Yeah. So I can't drop him yet, but like, it's in my mind. I have a lot of outfielders on this team. It's been bad.
That's how my is. Like, I have a really good core of outfielders plus a couple on the IL, and I'm like, I haven't started him in like 3 weeks. He's literally just on the bench, which in a 12 at that point, like, you're gone. My gut says it's the reality. It might benefit some teams later, but I got to fix my middle infield hole, and he and Hap's the one to go, essentially. So 7-1 in that regard. And the other one that stung, I literally spent a long time on this team trying to navigate the mindstorm to make this work without doing it, but I had to drop Wilson Contreras. I added David Fry 3-1. Fry's not even starting on Monday, but there were no options in this 12 out of surprisingly no catcher options in this 12. And I was trying to figure out who else I could drop. I'm like, I need these pitchers. Like, well, they're saying up to 10 weeks. I'm like, I'm sorry, Wilson. Like, it was cool, but we're out on this one again. 12 team leagues different than 15s, folks. So it just, this was the one I dropping Happ and Wilson Contreras in the same league. I'm like, it got me. The injury monster got me finally.
Well, to make you hopefully feel better, Contreras is only owned in 54% of main events now. So
so that was a big drop in main events, and that is good.
Yeah. I haven't looked
actually,
at
it. It does actually make me feel better.
Yeah, like, it makes me feel better too, but now that I didn't look until just now, but yeah.
Yeah, that is definitely a plus there. All right, let's hit up some listener questions before we head on out of here. You guys, Mondays are usually pretty quiet. You guys brought a few, which is great to see. Everybody calling my shot. That's a fun one, actually. Well, he always does. That's not what I meant, but he had a fun one here. Can you walk me through the thought process of how you adjust your fab bids in a specific league? Like, in my TGFBI, I have spent roughly 400, but the backup bids have been cumulatively only about 150. But most of the bids I put in are below average winning bids for some other players in main events. So what I'm asking is, I guess, how would you adjust your fab bids to account for a league that seems to have fairly unique spending? Like OCs? That sounds unique, but how would you go about it first? Because I'll give my two cents, which is probably not going to be very helpful.
So he mentioned it was his TGFBI league, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been in TGFBI a couple times. I'm not in it this year, but I feel like it's more like an OC. You would know because you play both. So people kind of check out. Even like right away, people will check out after they do the draft. Like, it's a big thing. So for that league in general, it's not going to be as aggressive as like a main event or even an OLAC probably. But when it comes just to in general, I would say just getting familiar with the 15 team format, like what the range is, like the Christian Scotts, okay, the $300 plus pitchers that are prospects. Then you have like the Manzardos or the Mervises, which is like $100 cheaper typically. But also too, from then you have like the Max Keplers who are like in the mid hundred, like up to $100, maybe like those boring vets that are just productive. You get a sense of what each player type goes for typically. That's just through experience. I'm still getting better with that myself. I'm still kind of new to this compared to other players. So I remember last year, Curlin, he would always talk about how he was like hawking other teams' ads in season to like kind of predict what they would bid. So I, last couple of times I've gone back. So I forget who the player was, but I wanted to see what my league did for this kind of player in the previous week. Not the same player, obviously, but a similar type of like maybe it's a rookie or something, a pitcher. But just like going back and you have to obviously wait till you get more data to do this. But as the weeks go on, and also too, the fab budgets are going to run out. But you'll see how aggressive people are for certain players, I think, in your league. And then you won't really know that till you start seeing stuff happening. But that's one thing to do too. And I don't know. It's just like for me, I think I bid like $40 on Mason Black, $46 every time. I'll just do like the same value. But in the one league where it was 24, that was the league I had Tristan Scott. So I didn't want to bid the same amount as like another main event where I had a lot more money, you know? So it's definitely not really, it's more like an art versus a science fab. I know people try to get like, they want the answer, but there's never really an answer. It's just a lot of feel and what you're comfortable with. I always say like the right bid is what you're comfortable with. I was willing to bid $96 on Brandon Lau. It wasn't the right bid, but I'm not really upset. I'm upset if he goes back on the IL or stays on the IL, but if he plays, I got him and I'm happy with it. So it's not easy.
Yeah, we're kind of in the same boat, actually. I thought we'd be a little different there. But yeah, Curlin had his analysis to it. I know the Gills and like some of those guys that spend a million hours on things have it like, oh, this guy can only spend so much. And this guy like does way more than I have time for. Like that's just reality. So what it comes down to is I think about my team, because that in the end, that's what matters, my team. So what are my team needs? And I want to make sure I get a guy. If I really want a guy, spend for him. If not, like when I had my Brian Ramos, John Singleton, I can't remember who the third corner infield was. I was like, after Ramos, they were all like $3 or $2, like whatever. Whatever one falls at that point, cool. I'll get him, play him for a few weeks, I'll move on. So kind of like knowing that, is it a streamer for me? Is it more of a long-term play like Paddock? I was up in the, I got him for 22-1. I had him like 36 another where I needed pitching more. That's kind of like the feel thing, the gut. Like I used to always use a joke gut. That's frowned upon now because there is only one gut in this fantasy industry. But I think I have a bigger gut, so I should actually get it. But it's kind of one of those things. It's like a feel, like Ben says, teams dependent, 12s are wild, TGFBI is wild because it's especially TGFBI, it's a free league. People are trying to make a splash in certain leagues, depending on who you have. Like they want the look at me factor. It's not trying to be rude. It's just reality. Like most of them are content creators. So like, it's just a whole thing. So you gotta have like a feel for it. But in the end, what I would tell you calling my shot is don't panic just that you've over quote unquote overspent. You got your guys. That's what you want. And as these leagues go on, people fall away. So you're going to get a ton of guys cheap as the season goes on. So if you want, take your bids down. If you don't think you totally need this guy, it's more of a, hey, it's an improvement on what I have, but I can survive with what I have. Or here's my waterfall. If I don't get this guy, these other guys are just fine to fill in, then lower your bid. Like lower your bid down and be cool with getting option B, C, and D. That's cool. Be in that world. Otherwise, if you really want a guy, like a couple weeks ago, I went heavy on Pajes and Eloy Jimenez in the league. Because I'm like, I want these guys on my roster. Like if they stay healthy for a full season, to me, they're game changers for full season plays. Whereas, you know, these other guys, DeLuca, $11. I had him for $2 the week before. Like it's kind of mix and match to me where things go in that regard, but it's an inexact science. If anybody tells you otherwise, they're liars. Like really, if people can predict fab, there'd be a lot more filled. So people in this world are winning millions of dollars, not just hundreds of thousands of dollars. So let's just be real. Like don't beat yourself up over it. It's literally for the most part, just a luck factor is the way I would say it.
Yeah, it's definitely lucky. And the one thing I'll add too, so for what I do for my like own fab is I track, I think I said this once a long time ago on a pod. I don't know if it was yours, but my first year in the main event, I ran out of fab in maybe August or something. And it was an awful feeling. It was my first time. I'm like, oh, I just wasted all this money. Whatever though. It's a huge opportunity. And then like you waste it with being out of moves. So what I do is I track my weekly spending and then I have my dollars per week in a column in Excel. I know Colin, my shot, like he's a very smart guy. He can definitely handle this. Bubba, you can handle this too. You're a smart guy too. So with $1,000 budget, and 27 fab weeks, which is what the main event at least was, it's $37 per week. But then like, so on one team, I had Christian Scott for 340 something. So that takes a big dent. So that team is now down to $19 a week. So that's also another, what Bubba was saying too, about being comfortable for your individual team. So like, that's why I only bid $24 on Christian Scott. I only spent 28 this on that team. And I barely move my dollars per week, changed by like 45 cents. So like just being mindful of what you have and what you need for the, now we have like 4.5 months left. It's still a long way to go. So just like things like that will help you along the way as well.
Yep. Yep. That's great advice. It's kind of like there's certain weeks you'll go over your quote unquote allotment, but just keeps you in mind going forward, like what you can and can't do. And like in reality, this past week was a light week for me. So I could have, if I did that kind of mapping, I probably saved money and change things for the future in a lot of leagues. So it'll waver throughout the season because hopefully you don't have a bunch of injuries one week and you just keep your guys. Like that's the perfect storm when all things are said and done. All right, a couple more questions here. Simon P says, what type of value do you see for Mike Ford and Helio Ramos, especially in deep NL only leagues? Well, I'll let you have the floor first.
Oh, man, I wanted you to talk about Helio Ramos.
I'll give you Mike Ford.
Oh, okay. yeah, so the former Yankee great Mike Ford.
Yes, the elite.
Yeah, let's pull up his page. So
he went deep on Sunday. He got that.
He did. He was 2 for 15 last week. So that sounds like Mike Ford to me.
Yep, pretty much.
Oh God. He's been batting third, which is kind of insane considering what the Reds started out with. He's actually playing against lefties as well. He DH'd last 5 games. Ford did. I think he's worth a shot, and especially in a deep NL only, like especially if they're home in Cincinnati. It's just not going to last for a while. Like once they get guys back, he's going to get kicked from the lineup. But for now, I mean, Friedel got hurt. He's back on the IL, which is very upsetting. So, I mean, that kind of helps the DH spot be open for Ford. So, I mean, for now I could see him sticking. I'm not really sure who else would kick him out. And Canasio Strand's hurt for a while. Yeah. So I guess he's there. It's kind of wild to say that he's going to be in the lineup for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, it's the Mike Ford thing. I think I hit on him last week talking somewhere. That if you're good with a potential low average but a ton of powers, especially in Cincinnati, like weeks where they're at home, there will be a week where he hits like 4 home runs. I will not be shocked by this. Like he will. But then he might not hit a ball for like 3 weeks. That is the Mike Ford experience. So just beware of that. But like you said, if he's playing every day in that lineup, like there is definitely opportunity to be very productive in a lonely leagues. Yeah, 100% with you there. Helio Ramos. And I always thought it was Helio. Folks, I went to the game on Saturday. It's Elliot Ramos. That's how they announce it in the ballpark. Did not know that. I literally, the look on my face when it went off, I'm like, what? Like, did not, because I've always heard Helio everywhere. That's all I've ever heard. At the ballpark, Elliot Ramos. So there you go. There's your lesson of the day. Yeah, he's playing every day, which is great. That's what you want to see. Well, playing almost every day, like one day off. But you want to see him out there, which is great. He's hit safely in 3 of 5 games, which is awesome. 294, 2 RBIs, no barrels yet, but a 60% hard hit rate, which gives me promise. Like there's still stuff coming there. He was mashing at AAA. 296, 8 homers, 2 steals. He was doing everything right for the most part. He was striking out 28%, walking 12%, kind of what you'd expect from a guy like Ramos. I'm very interested. If they're going to keep playing him every day, I'm very interested. And they should now because Conforto's on the IL and Jung Hooley's on the IL. Jung Hooley's probably going to be out for months, not weeks, months. So there is playing time for Ramos in the outfield. And if they continue to play him every day, he's 12-team and deeper viable, but definitely NL-only viable for me. Like I'm a big fan. If the playing, if he gets comfortable, there's a lot of potential here. So I would get on it now before it gets nasty. Let's put it that way. All right. There was a lot of Ramos fans. Let's put it that way because Aaron K said Helio Ramos or Luis Matos. It's bottom of the barrel, but everyone's hurt in San Francisco. I kind of like Wisely more than those two, but we'll see how playing time works. I take Ramos out of all of those. Matos is even at AAA, like he's okay, but he's still not like lights out. And we've seen it struggle in the bigs. That could change. Who knows? Give me Ramos there. I like his call on Wisely, though. Wisely got a little pop, much more of like a batting average guy with speed. So like I could see Wisely being sneaky in deeper formats if he were to play every day. Not the infield's not the issue. The outfield's where the playing time is. So keep an eye on that situation.
They really are a mess. Well, I'm looking at it right now. They have an outfield over the weekend. Injuries.
Over the weekend, it got bad, like real bad.
Hopefully Soler comes back this week.
Yeah, literally their starting outfield's gone right now in the span of like 4 days.
And their shortstop and their backup catcher.
Yeah, it's brutal. Adam Warner says, is Yelio Ramos worth a flyer in 15s? Had him on waterfalls in the teen range. In a week, I was, yes, he is. I'm just going to cut to this chaser. Yes, he is. Playing every day. He definitely is. One more question. It was DM'd to me during the show. He said, I hope it's, this is from Gerald Points, avid listener to all the shows. He says, I hope it's okay to ask a question while you're on the air for this week. Would you rather have Jay Estes or Matt Waldron in a 15-teamer? I believe Estes is the pitcher for the Oakland Athletics who pitched over the weekend. Estes would face Houston. Ooh, he gets at Houston this week. I'm already scared of that. Let's see what Waldron gets just for fun. Waldron is at Atlanta. Oh my God. Can you get a reliever? Like out of the two, I take Estes, I guess, but neither.
Hold on. Let me look real quick. So it was the Braves, and who was the other team they were facing?
Estes faces the Astros. Waldron faces the Braves. I'll take Estes if I have it, if that's my only options. But man,
that's awful, brutal matchups.
Both of them.
I remember seeing Waldron available somewhere, and I'm like, nope. I saw who he was pitching or facing. I'm like, I'm not doing that. Let me just keep looking real quick. I want to give him a good answer. So what I always do, I always look at, well, kind of like we did in the beginning, like the last 2 weeks and then how they're facing. So I think they're both right-handed pitchers. This is not great podcasting. So, who had the Braves? Waldron?
Waldron. They've been struggling. I'll say that much.
They have a 60 WRC plus over the last 2 weeks versus right-handed hitters. The Braves do. Houston is one of the best teams in baseball. I would probably go. I'd go Waldron, I guess, if it's only those two guys.
Oof. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, I wouldn't do either one, but that's fair. Yeah. That's a tough one, Gerald. Like, can you just not pitch someone that day or find a reliever? That'd be my two cents, because that's a rough go on that one. But on that note, Ben, we're going to wrap things up here. Thanks for joining me as always. Before we head on out, remind the listeners where they can find you these days and what you got going on.
So, yeah, thanks for having me on again, Bubba. It's been, I think it's like 3 weeks in a row. It's been nice.
Yes.
But you need Mike on now 3 weeks in a row to balance it out. If you can handle it, of course.
No, we're good.
Yeah, so I've been posting my article at Sports Ethos. I actually, shockingly, I picked Mason Black for an ad this week. I said, do as I say and as I do this week with that. And so I'll say here, it's I've had more success. So what I do is I give two, what I say, like matchup-based ads and then two merit-based ads. And naturally, with a 15-team main event, the merit, like the skills ads are going to be a little bit trickier. Doing all right with the streaming ads. Had guys like Quinn Priester when he got a quality start, just like grading myself, having a little fun. I'm above 500 with the matchup ads so far. And the merit-based ads or the skill-based ads are under 500. But I'm grading on all the starts. So like if Jake Irvin faces the Dodgers, I'm taking that start and I'm grading myself on it. But it's been fun. Just doing that every week. And if you're a subscriber to Sports Ethos, check it out. It usually drops sometime on Sunday every week.
Nope. Awesome. Go check it out, everybody. Ben's obviously a sharp guy. So I like having him on the show. Plus, he's a good guy, fun to talk to, and have a good time. So check him out on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T if you're not already. And you never know. Might be back next Monday. There's always that chance. Always that chance in this world. So thanks for listening, everybody. Make sure, again, you check him out on Twitter. I'm on Twitter @BDentric. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 671. Catch you all next time.